This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I am going to be talking to an old friend, Helena Hunting, about her new book called Starry-Eyed Love. But right now, I get to turn to an author whose book I admire so much. I am just really honored that he is on the program for many reasons. But we'll start with his newest book. And I want to thank so much Dan Hampton for joining me today. Dan Hampton has written a book called Valor, the astonishing World War II saga of one man's defiance and indomitable spirit. It is a marvelous book. I am so happy to welcome you to the program, Dan.
Well, good morning, Patsy with a Z, and thanks for the invitation.
Wow. There are many reasons why I love your writing. I'll talk about your other books after we talk about this one. This is, of course, your latest book. It is so... Well, it's really difficult for me not to start crying, because when I started the book, I got so emotional. You write so beautifully. You know, a historian always has this challenge to make the period come alive and make the characters, you know, just resonate with the reader. And you certainly have done that with this book. Your writing is just beautiful.
Well, thanks. That's about the nicest compliment I've had in a while. I appreciate that. And you're exactly right. History is fascinating to me, but I understand why some people find it dry and uninspiring, which is, as you said, probably the biggest challenge with this is to make it come alive, because if people can get involved in it, then maybe they'll learn something from it and appreciate some of the sacrifices, in this case, Bill Harris made.
Well, it's far from dry, and I can tell you, my eyes weren't dry when I read this. I was taken with this book in a way that, for reasons that also are personal, it meant so much to me. First of all, I love the opening where you say, you have a quote there, "In valor, there is hope." And, you know, we've had lately with the war in Ukraine and all the things that happened to our American soldiers, you know, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, we do have people who show valor. So I was taken with that. And then when I started the prologue, and I get tears in my eyes even as I read it. You take us there. You take us, you've picked just the right people to tell the story and to see it through their eyes, whether it starts, you know, with the nun dancing. I just got so involved with the book. I was crying in a lot of the places. I was smiling in others because I thought, this is something to be so proud of. So tell us this story and also how you came across this story.
Well, I don't want to give the book away.
No. Don't give the ending away, because not knowing what's going to happen, I think, is part of, well, it's always the reveal. It's just like a novel. A great novel, you have that reveal. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we know there's going to be problems. And boy, oh boy, he faces problems. But yes, but tell us about this marvelous person that you discovered and how Lieutenant William Frederick Bill Harris has impacted not just this book, but your life.
Well, I came across Bill when I was writing the book that was released before this called Vengeance. And it took place largely on Guadalcanal, and there was a Marine general there named Field Harris, who turns out to be Bill's father. And I was intrigued because in digging about a little bit, I found out that he had a son who was also a Marine officer in the Pacific. And, you know, brothers who fight together or fathers and sons, you know, it's always sort of intriguing to me. And I made a note of it, and then when Vengeance came out and was released, and they said, well, what else have you got? I said, well, what about this? And when I dug into Bill's story and what, you know, what he did and then eventually what happened, I was even more intrigued, and I was infinitely, I can't even tell you how much of a difference this made. I got a hold of his daughter, and we worked together a little bit on this because she gave me his 1,500-page manuscript that he'd written after the war as, no doubt, therapy. You know, we all deal with combat in different ways. His way was to write, and he wrote down everything that had happened to him. So all the thoughts in there that are ascribed to him, all the dialogue and everything came right out of his manuscript. So you really are talking and listening to and feeling with and enduring with Bill Harris throughout this book, which as an author was just a godsend.
Well, you know, as I'm reading it and I'm thinking to myself, you were really blessed that you had this work to and had the family to be able to talk to. And actually, there were so many people that you were able to talk to who went through this and who had these personal stories. And even for it's funny for me, the woman who lives in the condo just above me, she was in the Philippines at that time. She is now 100 years old, over 100 years old. And she went through that. Her husband was in the military. So I'd already been very cognizant of what was going on in that period, in that time. And that's why when I read the book, I'm really crying because you bring it to life. It's not, I was just amazed at it.
Well, again, that's very gracious of you to say. The manuscript certainly was a tremendous help. I had the benefit also of having seen a lot of these places. And, you know, there's an old cliche, a writer has to write about what he knows, and that's not always true, but it helps if you're writing nonfiction and historical books, because if you can describe these places from your own memories as well as, you know, whomever you're writing about, it really helps. And the fact that, I mean, I never went through what Bill went through, but I've seen enough combat to know how that feels and smells and looks in a lot of ways. And I know what it's like to be so hungry that you know, you'd eat about anything in front of you, and so tired all you want to do is sleep. So when Bill got to those places in his own manuscript where he was talking about that, I could empathize with it, and I think that showed through in the writing because I could put that in. I could add in a perspective that somebody who hadn't been through some of that himself wouldn't have.
So tell us the beginning, when you first introduced Bill to the listener, to the my listener, to the readers. Tell us about that, because I was really moved when you were you wrote about his mother.
Well, right, and like you mentioned, I mean, I think it's important to add as many different perspectives without becoming confusing as you can to a book. So that's why I was able to blend in not only Bill's point of view, but what his father was feeling through his letters and other things that I had, and also his mother. You know, what was it like to be on the home front in America in 1942? That's why I put, you know, a lot of those interesting tidbits in there. And besides, you know, you don't want the book to be too dark. And some of those things were kind of amusing, and some of it's very interesting to those of us that obviously didn't live through that. So I tried to put that in as much as I could. And in the beginning of the book, you know, he is on the Philippines, or in the Philippines. He's part of the 4th Marine Regiment that had come in from China. And he's there when Pearl Harbor happens. He's there when the Philippines are attacked. He's there when, you know, the Marines are basically moved down to defend Corregidor if Bataan fell, which is exactly what happened. So he saw it all, you know, from day one. He was in this, and he was in it for the next 3.5 years, which is an amazing story.
It is. Of course, one of the places that if people, if young people today know anything about World War II, I think that is like one of the few names they might recognize, knowing that in Iwo Jima, what went on there.
And that is one reason why I continue to write, you know, nonfiction military history to a large degree, is because I think we owe it to those folks that suffered so much. And you're right, you know, a lot of the younger generation doesn't know about it. It's not that they don't care, but they probably weren't taught, you know, much of this. And it's interesting that with what's going on in the Ukraine among the millennials and so forth, there seems to be a rising interest in this, and it's more of how come I was never taught anything about this, and where does this all come from? Why is Russia attacking the Ukraine? And so that eventually leads them back to, you know, World War II and the formation of the Soviet Union before that, and they're actually discovering things about history that they should have been taught in school, which is what I hope happens with this book, is that they realize, hey, I wasn't ever taught this. I'm going to find out about it. It's very interesting, and these people deserve to be remembered.
Exactly, because now I homeschooled my boys, so we did a great deal of history. I always felt that was the foundation. If they knew the dates, and if they knew when things happened, it helped to put the whole world in perspective. And here, of course, one of the things that just struck me right from the minute I started reading the book was about generals sometimes don't know what the heck they're doing.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, it's easy to judge their decisions with hindsight. And I was, I think, justifiably harsh on Doug MacArthur, which is probably what you're alluding to.
Yes.
But I think he deserves every spear I can throw at him, not because he didn't know what to do originally or not because he wasn't the best general in the world, but because he ran out and left his men on the Philippines, you know, and he left poor General Wainwright holding the bag. And as a former military officer, that's just appalling to me. It would never have occurred to me to leave my guys anywhere, especially to run off to the, you know, the Menzies Hotel in Melbourne, Australia, while they're fighting and dying on Corregidor. That's true. But the good thing about a good general or a good officer is that you will adapt to the situation. You can't know everything. You're supposed to make life and death decisions with imperfect information, which is something most civilians just can't fathom. But I mean, we do it all the time. We do it every day. And it's, you know, that's the essence of what makes a good officer and a good general, and there were some good ones and there were some bad ones. MacArthur happened to be a bad one.
Well, you know, again, one of the things that I think you're right, now this generation will perhaps, I hope at least, start taking this interest in history and start understanding where in the heck these wars are coming from. We went through this thing with Afghanistan that still shocks me every time I think about whoever made the decisions not to protect everything there. But I think now looking at a book like this, where you're talking about valor, and hopefully people start reading this book, it's going to make a wonderful Father's Day gift. I think anybody who is looking for a gift for Father's Day, a book like this, because it, as you said, it's not so dark that it's depressing. You know, there's horrific things. He went through hell, really hell. But on the other hand, you've made it into a real story so that we have all of this reveals, just like a great thriller writer. And I hope that, you know, this book will be given really for Father's Day to a lot of fathers out there who will appreciate it.
Well, thanks. And I think there is enough other non-war related items in there that would interest maybe anybody. You know, I think the point of view of Bill's mother and his future wife, you know, as they were living through this, is also quite interesting. Things that they could do, they couldn't do, frustrations that they had. I always am intrigued by the backstory for a lot of these, you know, larger events. And what you said about, you know, people learning from this, I hope they do. I think the interest in World War II reflects the fact that that was probably the last black and white period we had in our history, right? I mean, good was good, bad was bad in this struggle. There was no question as to who was evil and who needed to be vanquished. And that had that sort of clarity, that not ambiguous, that sort of clarity has not been seen in this country since, really. You know, you could always argue the conflicts either way, certainly the ones that I was in. And I want people to realize that, and I want people to be proud of what this nation was, and I believe still is. I believe that strength that is in Bill Harris and the fortitude, the defiance, the resiliency that he showed, I believe that most Americans still have that. And if it was needed, it would show up again, and we would do what we had to do.
And so many of our young people who sacrificed, and now, you know, we're looking at how we can help the veterans of Iraq and of Afghanistan. Yes, I hope that people will understand that we do have wonderful people like this. We have unbelievably brave people who really did sacrifice so much. And so many of them survived who wouldn't have survived in World War II. What I enjoyed also was the perspective how you looked at it through the Japanese pilot's eyes, how they looked at what they were about to attack. As all around, that's why I think this book is more than a nonfiction book. It's a thriller. We have a new category, a thrilling nonfiction book.
Well, thanks. That's also a very great compliment. Nonfiction, if it's not done right, can sometimes be, you know, sort of dull or more like a textbook. And I realize that, you know, if I want to get people to learn something about this, then it also has to be something that they want to read. And I am sure that Valor is. I think it's a good book. To be honest, I think it's probably the best one that I've written, and I'm profoundly grateful that I had the opportunity to do so.
Well, you've done a wonderful job with this book. As I said, it reads so nicely. You have dialogue that moves the story along. You talk a lot about the weapons, which I love. My husband, of course, was Israeli in the Israeli Air Force, so I look at things a little bit differently from most people. I look at sort of things from the military point of view. And as a matter of fact, I want to mention, first of all, this book, I think, will make a wonderful, wonderful gift for Father's Day. It's called Valor, the Astonishing World War II Saga of One Man's Defiance and Indomitable Spirit. And it is a story of a 25-year-old. You know, we talk about 20-somethings. And here he is, a 20-something, Lieutenant William Frederick Bill Harris. And this book is just a great and wonderful read. But I also want to mention, you have another book that I love. And it is called The Hunter Killers. And I love this book. It means a great deal to me. I worked for a long time on a project, and I'm still working on it, actually, called The Forgotten F-105 Warriors. And I've done a lot of work on it. We were very close to having a deal with one of the networks to do a series about the F-105 pilots, and of course about the weasels, and I've had various pilots on the program talking about their life, including Leo Thorsness. Colonel Leo Thorsness was on my program. He was one of my very first guests 7 years ago when I started the show, because I had worked with him on that project.
Yeah, that's thanks for mentioning that. That was a book very near to my heart, because that's largely what I did when I was a fighter pilot was hunted down and killed surface-to-air missiles. It was a very dangerous, downright crazy profession, but I actually really enjoyed it. you're right. That's a great story. And if I can ever help with your project, please feel free to ask. I'd be happy to contribute whatever I could.
Well, you have to go to my. I have a webpage called Forgotten F-105 Warriors. I did a sizzle reel. I've been working on this. One of the things that I focused on were, you know, as I was interviewing pilots, and I interviewed so many of the F-105 pilots at various events I went to, and just talking on the phone. Some of them have come to my home. But I also focused on the ground crews because they went through hell as much as the pilots because they loved the pilots so much. And every time a pilot took off, and they would wait for the planes to come back. And you know what they did in this Operation Rolling Thunder, sending the pilots day after day on the same route at the same time. And so many of them didn't come back. And so many of them landed up in you know, as prisoners in the Hanoi Hilton. And the ground crews suffered so much. And I have spent hundreds of hours talking to the ground crew members, and usually in the middle of the night, because they don't sleep well. They still remember being up at 0400, getting the planes ready.
Yep, that's true. I'm glad I'm too young to have taken part of that. I'd like to think I'd have gone and done it anyway, which I would have. But I'm glad things had gotten better by the time I went into combat to kill surface-to-air missiles.
Yeah, because the stupidity of it just still, you know, is almost too much sometimes to handle. But that book, The Hunter Killers, it's great. It's wonderful. I hope that people will get the new book, Valor, The Astonishing World War II Saga of One Man's Defiance and Indomitable Spirit. And you have a website?
No, I have a Facebook.
Facebook.
It's a Dan Hampton author.
Okay, well, Dan Hampton is the author of this wonderful book. All you have to do is type in Dan Hampton and Valor, the word Valor. It'll come up. Get this book. You will enjoy it as much as you will enjoy any thriller book. And you have the extra bonus of knowing this is a real story, a real person, and all of the heroes that you encounter in this book will make you feel better, really, will give you hope. And I think that's one of the important things, that we have to have hope, it's sometimes this war, as we're looking at the Ukrainian war, I know people are going crazy, but as Tacitus said, in Valor, there is hope. And I'm glad you opened your book with that quote.
Well, thank you, and thanks again for the invitation. I'm happy to be a part of it anytime you wish.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, perhaps around 4th of July you could come back, and we can talk about The Hunter Killers and some of your other books, because I would particularly love to talk about the Wild Weasels and about that whole story. And also, I'm going to have Robin Old's daughter on the program. She's been on before, and I wanted to talk to her. So perhaps you could be on the same program as Robin Old's daughter. How about that?
Oh, I'd love to. I know Christina. She's delightful. I'd be honored.
Okay.
Reach out, and I'll do it.
Okay, I will. Okay, thank you so much. Again, it was a great honor to talk to you, and because I didn't get to talk about what a hero you are too. So Dan Hampton, it's a wonderful book, and thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wonderful book. I cried so much. I really did. I tried this morning, you know, getting ready for the program. I went back and I read the first chapter, and there I am crying and crying. It's a beautiful book. I will have some commercials, and then I'm coming back with somebody, really, a Canadian. I love Canadians.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, with a Canadian. I'm so happy. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Helena Hunting. And the name of the book is Starry-Eyed Love. Hi, Helena.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, well, it is so good to talk to you again. You know, I talk to about 200 authors a year. And, you know, that's a lot of authors, right?
Yes.
And I love every one of them. But I do not think of each and every one of them every week. But I think of you every Saturday night because I buy a lottery ticket and I'm waiting to win the lottery so that I will be able to open a theme hotel.
That would be amazing.
That's it.
I will go.
Yeah, well,
I hope you open it.
No, you forget what I told you in my in our last interview, which was, you know, September. Boy, you wrote quickly because I didn't expect to have you back and so soon. That if I win the lottery, we're going to do this together.
Yeah, that's right. No, I remember now. We are. We're opening this together. So I better set aside some time for that, right?
That's it.
If you win this lottery, we are in, all in.
All in, because every Saturday night, I think of a Canadian who I will call her up and say, we're ready, we're going into business. How about that?
I think that's fantastic. I'm ready for it.
And then, of course, I was also thinking of you on Mother's Day, which is funny because I went to get some cake, and there I have buttercream Publix. I don't know if you know Publix. Here is our grocery store. And they had this wonderful, wonderful display of buttercream cupcakes. So, of course, I'm thinking of you because, again, you know, it's nice when an author has things in their books or in their stories that, you know, conjure up memories of them. And, of course, buttercream and booze. So I bought the buttercream cupcakes, and then I had my own booze There I'm
Fantastic.
Sitting. And I'm thinking about you on Mother's Day. How about that?
Oh, well, thank you so much. Were the cupcakes amazing?
Oh, they are. Oh, Fantastic. Publix makes the best buttercream. Wonderful. And the booze. helped
well,
along.
Together, I mean, you can't go wrong.
That's it. That's it. I got a Bahama Mama. You know, so I had a Bahama Mama and the buttercream cupcakes, and I'm thinking about you.
Oh, thank you. Well, that sounds like a really wonderful Mother's Day treat.
Yeah. Well, you know, you should do some kind of a thing with some of the, you know, all of the grocery stores that they do the Helena Hundy special.
Yeah, that's right. My special cupcakes. Some of the cupcakes, though, from Kiss My Cupcake are not appropriate for stores, but some of them are absolutely appropriate for stores.
Okay, so that's one of your other books. But we'll talk now about Starry Eyed Love. I love the title. It's just so sweet. Aww. And as usual, you have a beautiful cover.
It is. Oh, I love this cover. Purple is my favorite, so this one really makes me happy when I look at it, for sure.
And now we are back with the sisters, and we have Spark House. You tell us about the when we talked last time, I said the most important thing for an author, if you have characters that the readers will fall in love with and want to know more about, you've got a hit. And of course, you are your New York Times bestselling author, USA Today bestselling author. And you told me you didn't think of yourself as famous, but I think you're famous. And I'm waiting to hear about, you know, when your town has a Helena Hunting Day.
Oh my goodness! I don't think I could attend. I have such bad social anxiety too. I could not handle that many people looking at me at once. I don't think.
Well, I think you deserve a Helena Hunting Day. Maybe one of the. Well, you were born in a small town.
Well, I was born in St. Catharines, which is in like close to Niagara at the border, and it's about 130,000 people. But I live in a smaller town now, in outside of Toronto.
Well, I think
it's massive.
I think they should have a Helena Hunting Day, a parade, put a big banner across the street.
They're really funny. With cupcakes, obviously.
Oh, of course. And
sort of obstacle course.
And booze. Yeah. Oh, and
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I'll come up to Canada for that.
Okay. I you can stay in my house.
Okay. I will. Don't.
I have space.
Don't do that because I will. Anytime I can get up to Canada, I love that area. Okay, tell us about the whole story. Tell us about the sparks and tell us.
Absolutely. So Starry Eyed Love is focused on London Spark, and she's the middle sister out of the three Spark sisters. And they run an event hotel in Colorado. And an event hotel is it's the idea of that bed and breakfast feel, so it feels a little bit more intimate, but you can have big events with weddings and they throw birthday parties and bachelorette parties and team building events for corporate. And London runs the administrative side, but it's not really where her heart is. She's very creative. She loves all the crafty stuff and that's her passion, but she can only focus on that a little bit. But the story is really focused on these three sisters who are running this event hotel together. And London and her sisters are out for drinks. She's just broken up with her boyfriend. The relationship wasn't going in the direction she wanted it to, so she ended it. And she gets hit on by this guy. He buys their drinks, and he comes over, and he has all the lines. And she's like, thanks, but no thanks. I just got out of... Well, she tells him that she still has a boyfriend. But the lie is a small lie, but it gets her out of having to take his number. And a few months later, she's presenting. She's got this great opportunity. They're going... It could launch their hotel into another level, get them way more publicity, and... She's in the middle of the presentation, and this guy walks in and kind of makes himself at home. And she realizes he's the CEO of the company. And then she also realizes he's the guy that she turned down for a date. And now she has to work with him. And now it's about to get awkward. And that's the start of the story.
Oh, well, I think it's nice to get awkward with a billionaire.
Yeah, right? I mean, if you're going to get awkward with anyone, a billionaire sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it does. It does. It really does. You had so much fun with this book. It's really funny. It's charming. There's so many wonderful things to say about just the writing.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So the dynamics of these three sisters, tell us a little bit more about it, because I think it's intriguing how you've just, you know, given each one a specific talent, personality, and how you blend it all together.
Absolutely. So I was having a conversation yesterday about the middle child syndrome, right? That middle child, and that's London. She's right in the middle of these two. So she's kind of, the older sister mentor to the younger one, and then they end up being a bit like the glue that holds everything together. And London sort of takes on whatever role somebody needs her to, even if it's at the detriment to her own goals and her own dreams and her own passion. So we've got these three sisters, and Avery is really like the face of Sparkhouse, and she has a vision, and she is a little tunnel vision in the way that she approaches everything. And Harley's the youngest sister, just kind of like going along with the flow as much as she can. So there's siblings are wonderful, because you can have arguments, and you're going to have arguments. You can't work together and be sisters and not have fights. But the really great part about being siblings is that at the end of the day, you always have each other's back. And that's what we see with the Spark sisters, is that even when they are struggling to see eye to eye, they're always on each other's side.
Well, I think that's one of the things that makes the book so, they're just so pleasant to read. There's this warmth of family relationships. There's also the idea of small businesses and working as a family to build a business. And of course, I remember that you said your father is a sign painter. So he also went through, you know, building a business and understanding the complexities of it and just doing it always with this attitude that, yeah, we can do it. You know, it's our life, and we're going to make it.
That's right. Yeah. And yeah, that's exactly it that you there's a real desire to keep that family unit kind of connected to each other. And this business is a really great way to maintain that bond and also for them to grow together as a team.
Oh, now thinking about your father. Yeah, he can do that banner, Helena Hunting Day.
He can, actually. He can totally do the banner.
Yeah.
He'll be ready.
Oh, wow. I'm already planning this thing.
I love that we already have a parade, and it's going to happen.
Yeah.
My dad's going to make the banner, and that we're going to have cupcakes and booze.
Oh, and costumes.
We'll invite the Spark sisters. We'll pull. Can you imagine if all the characters were real and then they were all there?
Yeah.
I'm picturing it in my head actually now.
Yeah. Now, what we need, either one of us has to win the lottery, or we need a billionaire.
I know. Jackson could just magically appear. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, because let's talk a little bit. You did some nice work here with Jackson Holt. We have to admire billionaires even more so today.
yeah, especially a self-made billionaire.
Yes. Yeah,
somebody who worked from the ground up to get where he is.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit how you came out with him and his sort of persona, because I like him.
Yeah, I had fun with Jackson. He really kind of comes, he's a bit over the top when he first meets London, and he's just come off this business, or not a business, yeah, it was a business trip, but he's very involved in he's very philanthropic, and he does a lot of charity work, and he lost his parents to cancer when he was in his 20s. So he's got some baggage and some damage, and he's really spent most of his life just kind of focused on the work and focused on his job, and he's sort of put his love life and finding a partner off as a result. And then all of a sudden he comes back from this trip and he's recognizing that he is his own worst enemy when it comes to relationships, and he sees London and he goes after her. And then when he goes to that meeting and he sees her there and recognizes her and inserts himself in it, and then, you know, sort of pushes himself right into the middle of everything that she's doing, and then realizes he can't date her if he's working with her, because there's all sorts of issues with that. So there's a real organic build in their relationship because they're forced to be friends before they can act on the attraction that's there.
Well, that's what I liked, that you gave him, you know, first an interesting backstory, but also that he has his own goals and his own passions that blend in nicely with the family.
Yes. And they really, what I loved about writing these two is that they complement each other and they kind of lift each other up in the way that you really want a partner to do, that they're supportive of your goals and that they can see where you're going and they want to help you get there, right? Like that was such a fun part to write for these two.
So how are things with you in Canada, and how about with the promotion of the book nowadays? You know, things, the dynamics changed last, you know, when we were talking before, of course, things, Canada was really locked up and it was difficult for you to get out there and do anything. What's the situation now? Are you able to get back sort of in the saddle going around to events, or do you like to do that? How are you promoting your book?
So we're doing a radio tour right now, and there's always online events, and I do lives and stuff like that, like on Instagram, and I'll have live interviews. But this July, finally, there are events, and I can fly to the U.S. again. So this summer, I'll be in Dallas, Texas for Book Bonanza. It's a huge event. It's put on by Colleen Hoover, and there's a lot of money raised for charity, and it's like 150 romance authors and like over 2,000 attendees. So that's going to be a lot of fun. A little anxiety invoking because it'll be the first time on a plane and the first time at an event in probably 2.5 years. And then later in July, I'm at another book event in D.C. So, and our bookstores locally, so we have, you guys have Barnes & Noble, and we have Chapters Indigo. And so they are now booking authors to come in and sign in their stores again. So I'm working on that with a couple of local stores. So I think it's great. It's nice that we can finally go out and meet the readers again.
That's good.
And see them in person.
Yeah, because it is wonderful to be able to make that connection with fans, because I have a feeling you have a lot of fans.
I'm very fortunate in that my readers seem to just kind of come along for the ride, and that I'm very lucky that I have them, and they're an amazing group of people. I have a reader group on Facebook, and they're so kind. It's a really warm place to be.
Well, I'm sure they were happy, too. They didn't have to wait a whole year for the next book.
So, no, I know. Yeah, it's good. I'm actually very happy that they didn't have to wait too long.
So the third book is written? Done?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is. It's written and done. Harley's book is finished. And she is coming in January of 2023. We're just finalizing the cover, and it's just as gorgeous as story is I'd Love and When Sparks Fly, and I'm very excited to be able to share it soon.
Well, tell us, we don't have much time, but tell us some of the events that have also sort of intrigued you that you've been able to include.
Some of the events.
What's your favorite events?
Oh, like book events?
No, for the books.
Oh, for the books. Oh, okay. So I think, for Starry Eyed Love, I think my favorite thing for London is, so she makes all the centerpieces for everything. There is a huge event that they put on and the event that she ends up having to work with Jackson on, and it's a charity event. And so London is in the middle of all of this, and they're getting set up for this event, and then all of a sudden they're going on this trip together. He's like, hey, I'm going to take you to a meeting and it'll be great. It's an overnight, whatever, but it'll be fine. And what he doesn't tell her is that it's across the country and they have to fly there. And so that was probably one of my favorite events to write in Starry Eyed Love, because London has no idea what's going on until they're on their way to an airfield. And she's like, wait a minute, where is this meeting? And he's all, well, what's, I'm sure I told you, and he didn't, and he purposely didn't, because he knew if he did, she would be worried, and so he saved her from the worry, at least until they got on the plane.
Well, it is a lovely book, and as I said, it's delightful, and it's called Starry Eyed Love. The cover is beautiful, people. It's purple. It's so pretty, and with a lot of stars. And it's by Helena Hunting. And you have a website.
I do. It's HelenaHunting.com.
And I think your Facebook too, right? Is Helena Hunting? Just
it is, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, and people find out more about what's happening with you. Also, I wanted to mention that I think people are enjoying Audible books a lot. How are you doing with that?
The audio for this is available as well. So I get to choose, most of the time I get to choose narrators, and Jason Clark and Stella Bloom narrate this one, and they're both amazing, and I love working with them. I think all of my books are in audio, and I'm an avid listener. I love audiobooks, and I love starting my morning with a run and listening to chapters. So, yeah, I love audio.
Okay. Well, again, it's Starry Eyed Love, Helena Hunting. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. And everybody, get yourself a buttercream cupcake today, and a little bit of booze, and toast Helena Hunting, and we're going to have another great bestseller here from the best-selling person who thinks she's not famous, but she is famous, and she's going to have a day. One day, we're going to have a day, a Helena Hunting day, okay?
Sounds like fun.
Okay. I'm thinking of you every Saturday night.
Bye. I am crossing my fingers every Saturday night.
Okay, you do that. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Whoa, she's so cool. Is that cool? Really, I do. Every Saturday night, I get this lottery ticket, and I hope that I win, and I will start this theme hotel. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I have so many ideas for a theme hotel. So many ideas. Every week I would have a different theme. That would be so much fun. And then, of course, then I would have lots of money so that I could do all sorts of scholarships for kids. I could give a big money prize for the Patsy Prize, which I'm going to be giving next on the 8th anniversary. When we have the 8th anniversary, I'll give a Patsy Prize, which is a cash prize. You know, if I win the lottery, it's going to be a heck of a size of a prize. But that's for every author who's on, every new author with a debut book is eligible to win the Patsy Prize. So if you have a new book, if you're a new author and you are on the program this year, you will be eligible to be one of the winners of the Patsy Prize, which, as I said, is a cash prize. And you never know, and you won't know unless you are starting to write. So again, I want to thank everybody who's sending me these messages that yes, 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 you have started writing. And I'm glad that you have. You listen to me, because some of you are writing by hand. It was nice. I got a message from somebody who said, I went, after listening to my interview about the forest from Nat Geo, actually went out into the forest, found a nice spot, sat on a rock, and started writing by hand some poetry. I thought, that's pretty cool. I was really happy that I inspired somebody to do that. Because, first of all, I'm glad that you got out there and got some fresh air and everybody get out of the house, because this is, we've been stuck in the house long enough. But that you're starting with poetry. Because this really is such a training ground to become a great writer. If you look back in history, so many of the authors, the great writers that you know and admire, they all had a basic understanding or an absolute love of poetry. Because in the old days, that's what we did. Even, you know, when I was in school, we were still reading poetry. I don't know what they're doing in schools today, and I probably don't want to know. But we were reading serious poetry when I was in school and memorizing poetry. It wasn't that long ago. I'm not that ancient. So, but I don't think they're actually reading poetry in school today. It terrifies me to think about it. But it is a great training ground because you learn to use words. Each word in a poem is valuable. And I'm going to be talking in the next few weeks about Jim Lamb, who has written a new book of poetry, and we are going to be talking to him about that. And it's called Dark Fruit, and it's going to be coming out soon. And Jim Lamb has written some of the most beautiful poetry that I have read in a long time, wonderful poetry, along with Kim Dower, who was on my program a few weeks ago for her Mother's Day celebration, and her book, Mama, I Wore This Dress for You Today, because I love poetry, and it's a great, great way to learn how to be a good writer. Anyway, listen, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to, boy, oh boy, oh boy, your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her book, her series, Witch City Mysteries. Book number 12 came out a few weeks ago. It is called Till Death. It's a wonderful book. Get it? And I'm hoping that she's going to have a series one day soon, because she deserves it. And it would be so nice to have something new on television, because I cannot watch any more repeats. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good. And he saluted me. I saluted him. And everybody, get this book, Valor by Dan Hampton. There, we'll talk about saluting and about generals and about, well, what it means to have courage. Anyway, Dan Hampton, get that book. Bye-bye now.